I did not know my dad, had no recollection of my dad. And all I knew is I was raised by my mom. And when I was four, my mom met a man, and I literally thought, like, well, this is how dads come to be. Like, they just sort of enter into the picture. Like, they weren't there before, but they enter into the picture. Hmm. So this guy, my mom brings this guy over that she had been dating from work. And his first time in my life, 4 years old, that I ever remember a man actually walking in my house, right? So I'll never forget, like, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I bet this is the dude. Like, this is the dad, right? She found the dad. Like, that's what's going on in my mind. So this guy walks in. He's wearing like a three-piece suit. He was a white-collared data software, computer engineer type of a guy, briefcase, double Windsor tie, mustache, feathered hair. And he just comes walking in my house, my mom, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, that's a dad. Like, that in my mind, I was like, that's a dad. And I shake his hand and we introduce it. And the first thing I ask this guy is, are you going to be my dad?
Welcome to Parenting Teens Today with Jesse LeBeau.
How you doing, brother?
What is going on, Jesse? So you just came on my show, and I got to tell you, man, I got so many positive comments. They said your energy was really low, though, so I'm not sure about
that. Yeah, I need it. Time to go do some jumping jacks. It's adult attention deficit disorder.
Right.
It's so many words, I can barely get through that without getting distracted, I think. I had so much fun. I'm glad people are saying some good things there.
Oh man, they loved it. Like, a lot of really cool comments. I actually got a text from a friend of mine who's also a client this morning. He's like, man, I'm listening to podcast with you and Jesse, man. It's so good. Like, so yeah, lots of guys really liked it.
You know, what's interesting. I feel like a lot of times we get excited when we hear other people saying the things that we have been thinking about for a while. Because it's a lot of this stuff like, am I going crazy? Am I the only one that sees this or is experiencing this with life or kids or family? And then when you're able to connect, like, okay, yeah, no, there's other people that feel this same way. I'm not a crazy person. It's kind of a great feeling.
Did
you feel that and see that as well?
Man, I'll tell you, like, when you know, like, I remember when I first started Dad Edge, and one of the most, I think, reassuring things that really came to light, and it probably came to light the fastest, was the fact that my struggles, like, I was not alone with those. So, like, I know it sounds crazy, and I even think it's crazy that I say this kind of thing out loud, that back then, like 10 plus years ago, I felt like, man, I must be the only guy who's like face planning like this, because all my friends are telling me, like, oh, it's good and they're fine and everything's good. And it's like, it's the things that we don't say. So what I found is the more you're authentic and the more you kind of open up about these things that, quite frankly, they're not easy. The more you're like, you know, guys, you know, people raise their hand and like, yep, over here too. Yep. So, yeah.
Isn't that crazy? And we talked about on your podcast of basically this epidemic of loneliness and how we're not connecting like we should. Right. And it's affecting everyone, whether it's an adult or a kid. And that's exactly what you did, is you created a community for dads that can be there to support one another, to learn from one another, to encourage one another, to be there for each other during the hard times. I'm curious, and you've been doing this for almost a decade now, and is life-changing, like you said, selfishly for you, of like, hey, man, I'm not the only one out here. How did this all begin?
I wish I could say, you know, it's funny, man. I wish I could say it began with like something like awesome, like an epiphany, like some, like it's, it, do you know who John Bernthal is? The Punisher?
Yeah.
So I was on, I was on his podcast. This was about a year ago, and I'll never forget it. Like, it's one of the most hilarious clips. Like, if you watch the look on his face as I sort of tell this story that I'm about ready to tell you. So he asked me kind of the same thing. He's like, dude, he's like, how did Dad Edge even get started? And I'm sitting there with him in person. This wasn't even virtual. And I just decided to mess with him. And I actually thought like he probably knew that I was full of crap. But as I said what I was saying, like I was sitting there thinking, I was like, oh my God, he's actually buying this. Like, because the look on his face, he was just like, you could just see it. He was just like more and more like, are you serious? So I told him, I was like, yeah, man, I woke up one day and just, it was a Sunday morning and the sun was shining and everybody in my house was sleeping. I opened up the windows and the sunlight just hit my face just right. And I just had this divine epiphany that suddenly I was graced and blessed with everything there was to know about being a good dad and a good husband. And I just had to share it with the world. And I just looked at him and he's just like, and I'm like, dude, I'm full of crap, man.
Oh, this guy's a cult leader.
Turns out this guy's got a cult. Oh my God.
It
was so funny. Like he looked, I was like, dude, I'm totally full of crap. And he's just like, bro, come on, man. Like it was so funny, but no.
We're going to have to find that clip then and put it below for everyone so that I want to see it now. So we'll put it down there. So
it's actually pinned on my Instagram. So if you go to my Instagram, it's the first one you'll see. It's hilarious.
Okay, perfect.
He's just like, so we joke about it now. But anyway, how it got
Instagram's
started.
Just the dad edge, right?
Yeah, just
at the dad edge.
At okay, the dad perfect. Edge, yeah.
All right, so that's where we'll go for it.
So like it was not pretty, Jesse, at all. So like it really kind of started with my childhood, to be honest. Like I was, and I can give you more detail, but I was raised in a very unique sort of situation. My mom, biological father, were married pretty young, around 21. About 4 years into their marriage, they had me. And then they quickly got divorced after I was born. So like, and then my dad was just left. He also signed parental rights over at a very young age as well. So like, I did not know my dad, had no recollection of my dad. And all I knew is I was raised by my mom. And when I was four, my mom met a man and I literally thought like, well, this is how dads come to be. Like they just sort of enter into the picture. Like they weren't there before, but they enter into the picture. Hmm. So this guy, my mom brings this guy over that she had been dating from work. And his first time in my life, 4 years old, that I ever remember a man actually walking in my house. Right. So I'll never forget. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I bet this is the dude. Like, this is the dad, right? She found the dad. Like, that's what's going on in my mind. So this guy walks in. He's wearing like a 3-piece suit. He was a white collar data software, computer engineer type of a guy, briefcase, double Windsor tie, mustache, feathered hair. And he just comes walking in my house, my mom. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like that's a dad. Like that in my mind, I was like, that's a dad. And I shake his hand and we introduce it. And the first thing I asked this guy is, are you going to be my dad? Like just beaming. Wow. Right. And he was just like, and I think I actually heard my mom like actually gasp, like,
yeah,
like, right.
See, and that's one way to scare him off.
Right. Right. And he just kind of like laughed sort of awkwardly. But they got married, man, like 6 months later. Yeah. Got married and he adopted me. I still to this day have his last name. They were together for 6 years, but it was mad chaos. Like the first year was pretty cool. After that, a lot of drinking, a lot of abuse, a lot of just absolute pandemonium like that went on. Like I could tell you story after story. We don't have that kind of time. After when I was 10, they got divorced and he left and he was gone. And I've never seen him since. I actually found out about 10 years ago he died. And kind of crazy. Like I remember him leaving and I remember like thinking like, God, like this is, I'm so relieved. Like, I'm not going to hear them fight all the time. He's not going to beat me up. He's not going to beat my mom up. There's not going to be any more of these drunken like brawls and situations. But there was also a part of me that was like, this sucks. Like I don't have it. All my friends have dads. I don't have a dad. And so like, this sucks. 12 years old, a couple years later, I won't get into the detail for the sake of time, but I actually met my biological father and it was not on purpose. And I found out he only lived like 2 miles from us. I had no idea. He was remarried, business owner, 2-year-old son, another one on the way. And we just had this relationship. Like we started like hanging out and like, I immediately called the guy dad. Like I was so excited to have my real dad in my life. And he would come to my little league games and he would take me out and we would get food and we would do activities together. And then like after about 6 months, it just completely stopped. And he exited my life again. And that sucked. That really, really sucked. Because being 12 years old, you're like a preteen. And like, I don't know, man. I just kind of like gave up a little bit on life. I actually failed the eighth grade. I had to do eighth grade twice. And it wasn't because I didn't have the brains. I just gave up. Went on to high school. Went on to college. My mom got married a total of 3 times. But there was always a dude. There was a revolving door of just the same type of guy, partier, alcoholic, abuser, just disasters, right? So something really interesting happened. Graduated college, married my college sweetheart, still married to this day, 21 years. Fast forward to I'm 30 years old. I'm in the medical device industry. I was a sales rep for a medical device company. Really successful career, you know, married, first son on the way, I'm sitting in a Starbucks for a business meeting, and who came walking in for his morning coffee? My father. And that was surreal, dude. Like, I was just like, I'll never forget, like, one of a friend of mine that I was with, we also worked together, and I looked up and I was like, oh my God. Like, I just said to myself, I was like, I know who that is. And she looked at me, she's like, are you okay? You look like you just seen a ghost. I'm like, oh, I think I have. I was like, yeah, you're not gonna believe this. I was, yeah, was that?
Yeah, you have, really. So yeah. You were 12.
I hadn't seen him since I was 12. Jeez. But I recognized him right away. And so she was just like, I told her, I was like, you're not gonna believe this. It's like, my dad just walked in here. And she's like, what? Like, the one you haven't seen since you were 12? I was like, yeah. She's like, where is he? I was like, he's right over there. So, dude, without another word, she just took it upon herself. Because she asked me, she's like, what are you going to go say to him? I was like, I'm not going to go up to him at all. Like, I'm not going to say anything to him. Like, I'm 30 years old. Like, I've never been a part of my life, you know? And she didn't have to hear one more word. She just took it upon herself. She just got up and walked right over to him and sat down at his table and just started talking to him. And I'm like, what is she doing? And suddenly the guy comes over, extends his hand, shake hands, most awkward thing ever. But that was the launching pad for my dad. Now has been back in my life for the past 19 years. Mm. He's still married to the same woman, has been for 45 years, I think, plus. Two younger half brothers, and we have a very actually surprising functional relationship. But how did Dad Edge get started? I want to share that with you because it was a template and a blueprint for a lot of crazy things that were out of the ordinary that happened. So when I got married, I was like, you know what? I want to be a good dad. Like, I didn't have it growing up. I want to be a good dad. I only want to be married once. I want to do this thing right. And I wasn't doing any of it right. None of it. Like, mediocre marriage, wasn't the best communicator, had two boys at the time I started Dad Edge. I always promised myself one thing, and that was, when I become a father, I am not going to hit my children out of anger, because that was done to me.
Yeah.
And I broke that promise when my son, who's now 16, was 4 at the time. He stepped out of line as a 4-year-old would, don't expect anything less. And I turned him around, I swatted him on his butt. And I hit him so hard that he lost his footing and he fell. And I was like, oh my God, like, what did I just do? And then I went to go, this was the thing that killed me, man. I went to go help him up and he turned over and he saw me like trying to help him up. And he just went like this, like put his hands up, almost like, don't hurt me. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, and I never put my hands on my son before that, never have after. And that was a real gut check reality call. And I knew at that point, I was like, man, I suck as a dad right now. I don't know what I'm doing. I am not a good husband. I suck at that. I don't know what I'm doing, but I want to be better. So what if I actually learned? Like, what if I actually just took the effort and learned everything I possibly could about this whole thing? And that's how the podcast got started, because the podcast was really just like, I just want to talk to people way smarter than me. That's it. And I never really did it for a following. I never, like, I joke with people. I was like, I had 10 shows outlined and people that and after that, I'm on God's good humor. And I checked this morning and we're at 1,168 interviews all over the past 9 years. And it blows my mind. Like, and the lessons, man, they haven't stopped. They just keep coming. And every time I think, I'm like, oh, I think I got this part of it figured out, I just get humbled all over again and I have to learn something new again, but it's a continuing learning community. And that's what we're doing.
Man, amazing. And not only have you been able to apply it to your life and your family has felt that impact, but there's like 800 people right now in the group. Do I have that right? There are dads from all different kinds of walks of life that come together. You guys do things in person. Tell me a little bit about what people get when they're a part of the Dad Edge.
Yeah. So, you know, we have a few different groups, and some that are free. I think at this point we have, I don't know, like 350,000 followers, like on social media, right? If you combine all of our channels, the 800 that you're talking about is our membership community. So like it's our guys who, what we call it, we have two different programs. One's called the Dad Edge Alliance and one's called the Boardroom. The Boardroom is for business owners. That's the only difference. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more of a concierge type of a program, but yeah, 800 men total. that do life with us on the daily. We run 47 group coaching sessions per week. A lot of guys are working for me and a lot of coaches are working for me, and we help men with marriage, with parenting, with patience, with mindset, with leadership, health, optimizing their physical, mental, emotional, spiritual health, all of those things. Basically the education that you never get. That's what we're giving these guys.
Isn't it crazy? I think we laughed about that last time of like, in order to become a parent, there isn't a test that you have to take. There isn't a guidebook. You know, there's a few things out there, but most people are going into it completely blind and the hardest job out there. So
Right. That's
awesome. One thing I always like to ask people, and I think sometimes it's because it's the questions you want people to ask you, but can you share like one or maybe two just like awesome experiences from people that you've worked with who've maybe come in and had difficult circumstances and they found their tribe and their community, and then there's just been some awesome fruit that's been the result of that?
Man, I appreciate
you only choose two out of yeah. all, which is probably the hardest part.
No, I appreciate the question. I'll give you a couple of really fantastic examples. So I'll give you three of them. One will be a little bit longer in detail, but the story is so unique.
Okay.
And then I'll give you some short ones. But real quick, I was smiling as you were like, you know, like, oh, you have to have all these qualifications to do this other stuff. It always, anytime I hear that, I always think of the movie Parenthood that was in the 80s, like where Keanu Reeves was like a teenager in the movie. And he was like, he was telling his mother-in-law, he's like, you know, he's like, they, you know, you need a license to drive a car. You yeah. need a license to even catch a fish, but they'll let any jackass be a dad. Like, you know,
yeah, it's so
I
true.
Think of that.
Yeah.
But a couple of stories. So like there's a guy in the boardroom. So the dad is he's a business owner, owns 7 Del Tacos. If you look at him, we actually look like twins. It's crazy. His name is Ryan. He was on one of our coaching calls this morning. We were talking about like, hey, what's a win that you can share that's been really meaningful in the past 7 days? And dude, this guy was almost in tears because he was like, I got the most amazing text message from my 15-year-old today. His 15-year-old daughter. I was like, what is it? And he read it and he was just like, Dad, I know that this is random, but I just want to let you know you are the most awesome dad that any daughter could ever ask for. Thank you for always taking the time to talk to me, being so interested in my daily life. Like it doesn't go unnoticed. Like just that simple. And he was like, and I was like, why is that so meaningful to you? Like, I was just curious. And he's like, I joined this group a year ago. I did it because I really wanted to get my marriage back on point. But I really wanted this connection with my oldest daughter and I didn't have it at all. Like we were like ships passing the night. I did not know how to talk to her. I didn't know how to relate to her. Like I was kind of like annoying to her. And he's like, and I just took in every single thing that you guys have taught me for the past year and just implemented the heck out of it. And now we have the relationship that I've always wanted and I never knew how to do it. So that's one right there.
Yeah. And this morning.
Yeah, this was from this morning. Yeah.
Okay, so fresh. I love it.
Yeah. We've had guys too that have come in like marriage, right? Where you know, they want this connection so badly with their wives, but they just don't know how to have better conversations. They don't know how to create intimacy. They don't know how to make her feel seen, heard, safe. They don't even know how to communicate like, "Hey, I'm going to do all these things for you, but you know, here's what I need too." Like they don't know how to communicate that to their wives. So like we help these guys build their intimacy and their connection with their wives from the ground up. This one guy, like, and I'll just be real with you. He hadn't had sex with his wife in like 3 years. Mm. And like, he came into a coaching call last week and he was like beaming. He's like, "You're not gonna believe what happened." And I looked at him, I was like, "I think I know what happened." What happened?
Yeah.
And, but like what he's done is like, he's, the cool thing about it, right? Because there's no manipulation. There's no tactical things or coercion or anything like that. It's literally just teaching, this is how you connect with your wife. This is how you communicate. This is what she needs. This is what you need. This is how you both come together. So that was another one. But the one that really, really hits home for me, man, and this guy's in our boardroom. His name is, I'll just call him Mark. Because I don't want to like, there's a lot of detail in this. So this guy owns a company. I'll never forget, this guy applied to be a part of the boardroom. he pops up on Zoom, and this is before he joined, and I could see right away he was very professional. Like his office, there were like accolade things in the background, and he looked very professional. And I'm like, and it just immediately, like, he looked like a rock star to me, like as far as business goes. And we introduced ourselves, and I said, so tell me, why are you here? And he goes, I'll never forget this. He goes, well, he goes, I just sold my business last month for $42 million. And I'm like, $42 million? And he said, yeah. And he looked really upset. And I was like, dude, congratulations. I was like, that might be the biggest, you know, sales ticket I've ever heard, or at least worked with. I was like, so why are we here? And he's like, and then he just paused, and he's like, I have three boys. They're 10, they're 8, and 6. I've been married for 15 years. I went home last month, and I told my wife, guess what? Guess what? We sold the company, $42 million. He goes, you know what she asked me? She didn't even blink an eye. She goes, does this mean you can finally have donuts with dad, with the boys at school? Mm-hmm. It's once a month. You've never been there. Does this mean you actually get to do that? She could have cared less. Like, didn't even was like, yeah, awesome, right? And he's like, why would you ask me that? And then she was just like, you've been working. Like, you're hardly ever here. We don't know you. The boys don't know you. Like, they want to be a part of your life. Like, and I know you want to be a part of theirs, but you're just so busy. And the guy just lost it. And he was just like, I have been so focused on providing and doing this business. And cause I really wanted, like, if I could have hit this home run, he goes, but you know what? I'm here right now. I would give it all back, all of it. He goes, because I've lost a decade with my kids. He's like, I cannot afford, and I won't afford to do that anymore. He's been with our program a year. This guy is beaming. He's on cloud 9, and he'll still tell you this day, the money's nice, but I have my family. Like, I spend time with my boys. I talk to my boys. My wife and I are dating each other again. We're having sex again. We have intimacy again. It's almost like we're married for the first time again. He's like, this is what life is all about. Mm-hmm. So like those three stories, I mean, we see that kind of stuff all the time. The last one was really unique. Yeah. But yeah, that's the kind of stuff that guys come in and do.
Isn't that, I think it was Tony Robbins who said, success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. Right. Yeah. And what an example of that, you know, the quality of our relationships. I was just in Illinois this past week at a conference talking to kids, and they're asking me questions. And man, some of the things they say is just so, ends up being so profound. But the thing that kept coming up over and over again was bullying. Like they weren't saying the word bullying, but they're just saying when kids say mean things, and it was the same question over again, just worded a little different for that kid's kind of situation that they are going through. And it was back to this thing that you've built, which is you got to find amazing, awesome people to do life with. And hopefully that can be within your own family, with the family that you build. And that's some of the most important decisions that you're going to make. But the quality of your life really comes back down to the quality of those relationships, whether you're at the top of the mountain selling a company for $42 million, or you're at the bottom in your own family, feels like you're a stranger in the same home. And I just think that's such a powerful one. So I really appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, of course.
I'm curious, you've had thousands of different people from, didn't you have Matthew McConaughey at some point?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
So you've had all sorts of interesting characters and parenting experts and people who are the best at what they do in the world. Are there a few that stand out when you think back over that time that are like, oh man, like I'll never forget this thing that they shared, or I never looked at it that way? Would you mind maybe going back into your brain archive there and sharing a couple of your highlights?
Of course. Yeah. And you know, I'll talk about Matthew McConaughey. I have to admire Matthew because he really came to that podcast with pure authenticity. Right. And here's what I can tell you, like Matthew could say anything and we would all believe him. Right.
Yeah.
He's Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
So he really doesn't, there isn't a whole lot, like he only had, there's only a cost to him being brutally honest with himself publicly and with us. And so took him through like a, you know, a really cool interview. And then we got to the marriage part and I asked him, I was like, you know, I was like, you, I watch on social and I know your wife means the world to you. And you guys, you and Camilla, you guys always seem like you guys are on point, you know, like with your relationship. And I said, what is the secret to that? Like, what do you do? And he, dude, he could have said anything. Yeah. We would all been like, cool, we believe you.
Yeah.
But he took a deep breath and he was just like, you asking me that question has reminded me that I haven't been so good about that lately. And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, I'm in the process of filming Sing 2 right now. He's like, the book is out. I'm on podcasts. I'm doing like tours and stuff like that where I'm getting ready to film another movie. And, you know, the kids are in there, they're in all kinds of activities. So it's all about the kids right now. And he's like, you asking me that question just made me realize I have not been good in that area lately and I need to be better. He's like, I need to have better conversations with her. I need to take her out on more dates. I need to have better we need to talk about deeper things other than just the managerial things in our life. I haven't done that in a while. And I just sat there and I was like, damn, dude, that's cool. Like that, you could have said anything and the whole audience would believe you, but he just got real. And I love the fact that like guys like that can literally like, we all put our pants on the same way when it comes to that kind of stuff. Like when it comes to fatherhood, like I don't care who you are. Like you can be one of the most elite, amazing operators in the world and still struggle with that. I had a client that was a highly decorated Navy SEAL and I can't disclose his name or I can't even disclose like his skill set in the SEALs because his name is so everybody knows who he is, but I'll put it like this. He was the best at what he did in the SEALs for the team. So this guy is like one of the baddest dudes on the planet, like mental toughness, physical, emotional resilience, the whole nine yards. And his boys wanted nothing to do with him. Like two teenage boys. And here's what I'll tell you. This guy was so stuck on like, I don't understand why I can't get respect from my boys. He's like, I'm a highly decorated Navy SEAL. Like I'm this, I'm that, I've achieved this, I've achieved that. Like, why don't they respect me? And I worked with this guy for a while. And finally, like it was a few weeks into our session. I said, listen, man, I need to have full permission to just put a mirror in your face and be very direct with you. He's like, all right. I looked at him. I said, your boys don't care about you being a Navy SEAL. They don't care how many medals you have. They don't care what you did in duty. They don't care your skill set. They want you to be dad. That's who you need to be. That's who you need to be. And it was almost like you saw the guy, like he got it. He was like, oh shit. Like literally that was his response. He was like, I don't know how to do that. I was like, we're going to figure that out. Don't worry. Worked with him for a year.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, man, one of the coolest transformations I've ever seen. And that guy was operating at like one of the highest levels I've ever seen. But so he wasn't a guest, but he was a client. But a couple other guests too.
Yeah, yeah. I love that.
I had Nikki Six on.
Okay.
He was Motley Crue, right?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, Nikki was so well spoken, and he's actually so smart. And I really, really applaud him because like my oldest son is a huge rock and roll fan, so he loves Motley Crue. So when he found out I was interviewing Nikki Sixx, he's like, oh my God, can I please be a part of that?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, Nikki Sixx has been sober for 25 years. So I said, hey, I'm done with my questions. I was like, but my oldest son who's in studio with us, he'd like to ask you something. And I was like, I don't know what he's going to ask you. I was like, so is that cool? He's like, yeah, it's cool. Bring it on. Yeah. So my son asked him, he's like, Nikki, he's like, what is some advice you would give me and my generation? And Nikki was like, and this is the transparency, right? And the authenticity. He's like, man, Ethan, he's like, that's a good question, dude. He goes, I could give you like some coddled comfort, you know, warm blanket answer, but I'm more or less going to give you a shotgun blast to the face. Is that okay with you? He's like, yeah. And Nikki was like, listen, man, when I was your age, like all my dirty laundry's out there. Like, you know, we get together like at your age and we'd be smoking weed and drinking beer, stealing beer from like our friends' dads and all this other stuff.
You're like, thanks, like, this is not what we want from
me. I know. I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, oh my God, what are you going to sell my kid? Right. Yeah, yeah. And he goes, but I'll tell you, he goes, your generation, the drugs out there, like, dude, they'll straight up kill you. Like, they will kill you. He's like, all this stuff, like people just trying something and then it's laced with fentanyl or it's laced with something else. And all of a sudden, like they tried something for the first time and they're dead. They're dead.
Yeah.
He's like, I just read last week about two all-star football players on a varsity team at a local high school. They never tried drugs. They tried drugs at a party and they were dead. He's like, so I would take a really good look at the people you're surrounding yourself with. I take a really good look at anything that's peer pressuring you and people who are pushing you to do something. Take a good look at those relationships and gut check them. And I was like, oh, thank God. But like, I just thought that was like really raw. He didn't have to get like that raw or like pull out any things that he did when he was younger. But I was like, man, for a guy like Nikki Six to tell my son that the last thing you want to do is drugs, man, I thought that was cool.
Yeah. And I can speak to that even just at the airport 2 days ago. A car pulled up and had like a, you know, Justice for, and then it had the kid's name. And I Googled it, a phone waiting here for a ride. And it was a kid right here where I'm at in Arizona who had tried a drug for the one time and it had fentanyl in it and killed him. So, I mean, as much as, you know, he's saying this in a different generation, like he's spot on the money. Like it is so dangerous.
Yeah, I agree. It is terrifying. It really is. You know, one other person I'll share too, I just interviewed Chris Daughtry.
Okay.
And, I mean, that guy, you know, he's superstar, rock star, his song Artificial, his single hit number one, like a month ago on the charts.
Wow.
And that guy was about as authentic and as imperfect as you could possibly imagine. Like he just said boldly and bluntly, like when I first became a dad, he's like, I was 20 years old. I had stepkids because I married an older, he's still married to his wife, Deanna, to this day. And he was just like, I made so many mistakes. I didn't know what I was doing. He goes, I still don't know what I'm doing. He's like, I still fall on my face constantly in that area. He's like, I can sing any song you want. And I have a great range of the voice. He's like, but put me in a situation where I'm tested as a dad. Whew, that's a test, right? So I think a lot of these guys, like they just bring humanity to this area of our life that we have a lot of shame and a guilt if we don't have it all figured out. And you got these superstars that talk the opposite. They're like, man, I struggle with this too. That's what I'm saying. Like, it doesn't really matter. What I've found is no matter who I'm interviewing, how high level they are, we all put our pants on the exact same way when it comes to these areas.
I think you really nailed it too when you were talking earlier about your kid doesn't care that this is what you do for a living or this is what you're known for. They just want dad. And I feel like I've heard that in interviews, whether it's someone, a huge star like Kevin Hart, who's like, yeah, I just, anything I do, my kids are embarrassed by me and they just roll their eyes. Because it's dad, or the NBA player, and it's like, cool, you do all those things, but you're a dork at home, and you take too long, and we're waiting for you in the car, and all those things. So just showing up as the best dad that you can be is so huge. What do your kids think of this empire that you've built? Do they think it's pretty cool to come in and ask some questions to some people that they're fans of? Does it get a little bit overwhelming sometimes? How's been kind of their I guess, walk around what you're doing.
I mean, so it's been such a really cool experience and extremely like pie in the face humbling for me at the same time. And I'll share with you why. So like doing Dad Edge for the past decade, it's afforded like amazing interactions and conversations and getting to meet people that I otherwise wouldn't meet and things that we get to do that we otherwise wouldn't be able to do. So like, for instance, I just interviewed Roderick Strong, who he is the current All Elite Wrestling international champion, and probably I mean, the guy, he's a savage in the ring. Like, the stuff that guy can do in the wrestling ring is unbelievable. But, like, he's got one son, he's married, and, like, that guy came on the podcast last week and, like, literally was one of the most authentic interviews I've ever heard. Like, the guy was in tears, and he's, like, this wrestler. And he's like, hey, man, like, we're going to be in St. Louis for pay-per-view. I want to get you tickets for you and your son and for me and my 10-year-old. He loves wrestling. He's like, we're going to bring you back, and you're going to hang out with the wrestlers. And I'm like, are you kidding me, man? And he's like, no, man, I want to do this for you. So, like, I took my 10-year-old, and he got to meet these superstars. And I also took my 10-year-old. He got to meet Chris Daughtry. And, you know, like, I brought my oldest to meet John Bernthal, you know, like, and he – so anytime we have, like, really big – names like that or stars, I'll bring my kids along with us. But a lot of these people, man, that they're like the rock stars, like we get to see them in concert, you know, like, or like the wrestlers or that kind of thing. Like, it's just really, really cool stuff, which is really awesome. I love that experience for us. Right. And my 10-year-old was saying this past Sunday when I took him to wrestling, he's just like, it's like the coolest life, Dad. It's like the coolest thing ever. I was like, you know what? I was like, Dad Edge has done so much, like, for me as a dad. Like, I wouldn't have the connection with my boys if I hadn't done this work. But it's also like these really cool experiences that we otherwise wouldn't have had. It's just like, it's just afforded us like some amazing experiences. But here's what I'll tell you. That's like, you know, a pie in the face, or it's like humble pie.
Yeah.
I do this for a living, and I screw up every day as a dad, every single day, which my imposter syndrome alarms are like 911 a lot. Like, I have a course, Jesse, on how to be a more patient dad. I actually taught a course with 6 skills to make you more resilient, more calm, more patient, less reactive, more responsive. And then when I lose my cool, I'm like, what? You know what I mean? It's like, it's almost like
a plan until you get popped in the face.
I'm telling you, man, it's almost like, it's like the guy who goes to schools and teaches kids on not to do drugs. And then you'll find the same guy on the corner selling drugs. Like, that's what I feel like sometimes, like, just like, but I also know that, yeah, but I also know, like, we're human, like, you do the best job you can, you know. If anything, like, teaching what I teach has brought more awareness. But oh my gosh, man, it screws with my head sometimes, I'm not gonna lie, when I screw up.
Dude, I totally feel you on that, because I am the person that goes and talks at schools about having a good attitude. And I can be the young version of Larry David, where everything wants, it gets me flabbergasted and like, what are you talking about? And then it's the ultimate accountability, like, nope, gotta try to hold it together, because this is what we're talking about in life, and we gotta walk the walk. So, yeah. Oh man, I appreciate you being so open and honest about that, and I'm glad that they're having fun, because like you said, if you hadn't jumped in there and done the work, then a lot of these things wouldn't happen. I know one of the things that you're big on is communication with your kids and having difficult conversations. And I also want to jump into the book stuff too. So maybe we can seam it all together, or we'll hop there. But can you talk about creating that environment where kids feel comfortable talking about anything that comes up, and kind of what you've learned, how to set that up in your own home?
So, yeah, I mean, as a dad, right, as a parent, or it doesn't matter if you're a parent or not, because the same skill sets apply. You need to use these types of things when you're married. You use them in the workplace, use them all the time. And what I'm really talking about here is creating an environment of psychological safety through communication and conversational excellence. That sounds like more of like a academic statement. But I'll give you an example. I'm having to think about this a little bit, because I just had this conversation with my oldest yesterday, and it's, you know, we had to talk to my oldest about a few things that we've seen that my wife and I don't agree with, right? And some red flags that we've noticed, and we had to have a conversation with him. But it was also important for us to keep what we call the doors always open, right? Like saloon doors, right? To where like most of us are raised in an environment where we avoid talking to our parents. And we always want to keep our relationship open to the fact that always feel safe here. You know, even when we talk about the hard stuff, I want you to feel safe here, right? So like, if I want my kids to feel safe, and if I want them to tell me things that they otherwise wouldn't, and for them to also receive things that we're talking about, then I have to create that environment. So like, I'll give you an example. Body language is a big one. How we position our bodies to have conversations like that is really, really important. So I'll give you an example. If I stand nose to nose, toes to toes with my kid and we have a tough conversation, subconsciously, it's me against you. Like that's what it feels like to them. Mm. However, like yesterday, if I take you on a walk with our dog and we're walking side by side and we're having a conversation that you know is tough, it's going to feel way less tough and you're going to tell me way more information because there's something that happens in the mind when you're walking side by side. You actually get in sync with each other. Like you're kind of like stepping at the same time. You're shoulder to shoulder, which means like, hey, we're on the same team. We're going in the same direction. We have the same type of goals, right? Like, this is why I love like the difference between like a UFC fighter. You know, they have the face off and you can see like these guys are about ready to go. But then you have something like the football game where the team goes out shoulder to shoulder for the coin toss. Mm-hmm. And it's like those four or five football players, like they're impenetrable, right? They feel like, hey, I'm safe with you here. I know you're here. We have the same goals. We have the same thing we're doing and we're walking out here together. And a walk will do that very same thing. The other thing too, is that what I really love about having conversations around psychological safety, around tough things, is I get really, really curious. And I get really curious with really good questions. I try not to talk that much when I'm having tough conversations. Instead, I prompt with questions that really pull things out. So like I'll ask something like, you know, hey, you know, tell me the last, like, and I'm trying to like not give too much detail here or the privacy of my kids, but I'm like, you know, tell me what happens when such and such happens. Like, tell me, and I do it in that voice tone of curiosity, not like, why did you do that? Kids are going to shut down. Human beings will shut down. Like, why'd you do that? What were you thinking? Instead, it was like, when this and this happens, what does it feel like to you? Or what's going through your mind? Like, tell me what's going through your mind. And then they're searching and they're thinking through things. And then I'll just simply ask, you know, like, well, when you're doing something like that, you know, is that in alignment with what you really want out of life? You know, I know you have these goals and these dreams, is participating in this particular activity or whatever, is that going to push you forward? Or do you feel like some sense of like, this doesn't align with me, which is it for you? And they'll tell me, you know, they'll be like, it's not in alignment with who I am. I'm like, well, what does that feel like when you're out of alignment? You know, and then they'll just talk about it. And I'll be like, you know, is that a feeling that you just want to have all the time, that you want to perpetuate that, or would feel better if you didn't have those feelings? And basically what I'm doing is I'm just getting very curious.
Yeah.
And I'm asking questions and I'm doing it in a voice tone. I'm doing it in an environment where, hey, and I tell my kids like, listen, man, we're on the same team here. This isn't me against you. I'm your dad. I'm not your friend. I'm here to guide you. But I'm also here because I'm curious about what's going on in your mind, not just telling you what to do or what I think you should do. Let's really dissect like what's going on. And I think from a father perspective or a parent perspective, like kids really, they gravitate to conversations like that versus like, what the hell were you thinking? What's wrong with you, boy? Like when we take that phone away, like we don't do that. You know, there's a time and a place for that type of discipline. But it's not necessarily the most effective thing on the planet either.
Man, so it really sounds like just seeking to understand genuinely and sincerely and not just act out of frustration, which is a lot easier said than done. Like you said, I'm the guy coaching patience and how to be calm and all these things. And it could just be absolutely mayhem trying to actually do that in real life. That's awesome. So I'm curious now, not that you have to go into the details or anything, how did your son receive this conversation that you just had, even though you did all of these kind of social, emotional, intelligent ways of going about it, which is probably a lot different than most of our parents did with us, which was more, I'm scared of that guy. Like I just don't want to make him mad and those types of things. Did it go pretty well? Was there some feedback? Like how did it actually break down?
It went really well. And I don't know if you know who Chris Voss is.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The negotiator, so like right?
The negotiator, right. Yeah. So like the way Chris, you know, if you can make a terrorist who has a hostage feel comfortable, seen, heard, and safe, and then you can make your teenager feel the same. Yeah. It went really, really well. The other thing too is I like when we have tough conversations like that, and let's just say we have to make a pivot. We have to do things differently in our life, right? I'm talking about my kids.
Yep.
Yesterday, you know, we were talking about like, hey, in order to fend off bad things or things that tempt us or just whatever bad habits that we have in our life, it's better to habit stack good things in our life to keep the bad away. So, and like my goal for the outcome yesterday was like, I want to make sure he understands what good looks like and he has a plan that he's going to execute upon. So what we did was I'm a big fan of what we call agreements, not because I told you so, if that makes sense. So like, for instance, I told him at the beginning of the conversation, this is kind of where Chris Voss kind of comes in. And that is, I told him just outright, I said, hey, the conversation that we're about ready to have, this is a safe place. I want you to feel comfortable to say whatever's on your mind. If you want to talk with basically no filter, like while we're on this walk, this is the place to do it. You can absolutely do it. I'm not saying I'm going to agree with everything that you say, but this is a place for you to just unleash everything. Okay. Is that agreed? And he's like, yes, that's great. Okay. I said, here's the other thing too. I can't promise you're going to like everything that we talk about. And I can promise that there are going to be points in this conversation you're probably going to feel uncomfortable. So that's like Chris's technique of like saying like, this is going to be tough and I'm telling you like it is, because that it helps deactivate those negative emotions that they're probably feeling about it anyway, right? Mm-hmm. If we bring that to the surface, it's easier to deal with. I told him, I said, at the end of this, what I would really like to do is I'd like to come to an agreement, right, of how we're going to operate moving forward and what that agreement looks like. So the way I think most of us were raised is if there was any wrongdoing, they're like, oh yeah, you did that. So this is what we're doing right now. We're doing this. 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 And you're going to do it. And while you're like, okay, I'll do it because I don't want the negative outcome, but this sucks. Instead, what we do is we co-design an agreement. And I'm like, okay, we've gotten all these things out, right? We know what bad looks like. Let's talk about what good looks like. And let's come to an agreement that these good habits are going to be done on a daily basis. And what I want to help you do is come to an agreement of how we're going to stack wins every single day. How does that sound? And he's like, yeah. So I'm like, okay, if you were to start stacking wins, like what is one thing you would do right when you got up? He's like, I'd make my bed. I'm like, man, I think that's a great start. Like if you look at successful people, that's something that they do. It's like the first win of the day. Right. So I was like, can we agree that that's one of the things that you're going to do moving forward? And he's like, yeah. I was like, great. So we popped it in our iPhone, in our notes, like, okay, that one's in there. And then we came up with a list of 8 other things that we were going to do on a daily basis. Some of them were quite simple. A couple of them were not so simple, but that's okay. But now it's not dad told me I had to do these things.
Yeah.
It's the agreement that holds the clout, because if the agreement's broken, I'm like, hey, the agreement's broken. Like, so what do we do about that, right? There are consequences if the agreement's broken, not because I told you to, but it's because we agreed on it. Like you actually came to the table with these ideas and we agreed on them. So that's a tactic I think that a lot of parents can really, really use, is like, hey, it's not because I told you so. It's because you and I, literally worked together side by side on what this new thing could look like. And you agreed upon it, and so did I. So if the agreement's broken, it's not because you went against my word, you went against the agreement, which that's a much easier conversation to have. And it usually feels a heck of a lot better and really good to people who are doing an agreement and not under like a dictatorship, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Collaborating and having them be involved as part of that process beforehand. And I've even seen with that a lot of times the kids will come up with harsher, like higher expectations and bigger punishments, if we can say that, for when they don't maintain what they're supposed to do, which is pretty interesting. So I love that,
man. It is.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad that we get you guys.
If I could comment on that. So like if there's wrongdoing in the house, like we always ask the kids, we're like, what do you think? They're going to listen to a podcast and they're going to figure out that we knew that, but my wife and I will be like, this happened. What do you think is a fair consequence? And they'll come up with something. And I'm like, I wasn't thinking that bad, but okay. Yeah. Like, I don't say that out loud. I'm like, sounds fair.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what we're doing. Yeah. But I'm sitting here thinking like, it's crazy to me that like most of the time, the consequences they come up with are actually way more harsh than what I would have.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that. I've seen that and heard it time and time again.
Yeah.
Last time we talked, you were putting your phone in a box just to get away with it, get away from it, so that you could be more dialed in and present with your family. I would love an update on that. And also just hear your kind of way that you're navigating your kids' smartphone usage.
Yeah. So I think what you're talking about is RO.
The RO box.
The RO. Yeah. We had a couple of guests come on who came up with this amazing, amazing product called RO, A-R-O. And it's a box. It's a decorative box. And these guys, it's wife approved. So it looks nice sitting on the counter. my goal, cause one of the things that's an opportunity for growth for me, is I was terrible with my phone in the evenings. I mean, like I wasn't completely absent, but it would go off and I'd go to it. Like, and I would be like, oh, I probably didn't matter what time of night. And I'm just like, you know what? This has gotta stop. So I have a daily goal, no less than 3 hours completely and totally away from my phone. And it goes into the RO, meaning like it goes into this box and the RO actually measures my time away from my phone. And when I say away from my phone, a lot of people are like, oh, I'll just put it on the counter or I'll just put it in my pocket. Yeah. And I'm like, there's something actually so incredibly freeing. Oof. When it's out of sight, when it's not on you, when it's out of mind. And the funny thing is I've been doing this now for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, 5 months maybe. And I average, I think my best week was 32 hours away from my phone. I think my worst week was 12, right around there. But what I can tell you is like, there's something so freeing about not having that device. And there's something so cool about being completely dialed in to your environment and the people in it. And I'm sorry, but you just don't get the same outcome if that phone is on you or if it's in sight.
Yeah.
Because if you hear it go off, you're like, oh, what are people doing? What are they thinking? Or like, what are they pinging me for? What do I need? It's really cool. Here's the other fascinating thing that I found. I always thought like, well, what if I fall behind? Or what if I don't like, if I miss something? I think I have yet to miss anything. In fact, here's do you want to hear something really crazy?
Yes.
What I've learned is I'll go, you know, be away from my phone for 4 or 5 hours and I'll look at it and be like, I got 3 text messages. That's really odd, right? Like I thought I have more, but here's what that's telling me. I am the biggest culprit in how busy my phone is. Mm. So if I'm not there to initiate something, very rarely do I have to do anything because I'm not initiating anything outbound. So it's been a really fascinating experience. I'm like, wow, I'm like the biggest problem here, actually.
It turns out the problem was me. I had a college teammate, shout out to Paul Wolf. And it was when Facebook was, I mean, it's still big, but was, you know, kind of the new kid on the block, and he'd always be like, yeah, I go and I have to like comment and like some things, and then I come back to my phone and I have these notifications. I got this red thing and a notification. And so he's like, yeah, I got to do that so that I have this. So exactly what you're saying of like, if you're not there going and clicking everything and texting people, then you're not going to have this abundance coming back. So, yeah. So what does it look like for your kids and your rules and agreements, as you like to say, around their usage of phones?
So I haven't really gotten my kids on the RO bandwagon just yet.
Okay.
I'm purposely like planting like these seeds. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go put my phone in the RO. And then like, I'll say things like, I've had my oldest, like, what's it like being away from the phone? I was like, dude, it's awesome. Like,
yeah,
it is awesome. So like what I'm doing is I need to make sure that I am the one who's doing these things before I'm like, you guys should do this too. I want them to be more attracted to it, like, because they see the good things that are happening, and then for them to raise their hand and for us to do this together. Mm. So here's how we, so my little guys, my 10-year-old, my 8-year-old, they don't have phones. They will not have phones until they're 14. But my two older boys, 16 and 18, I mean, I have an 18-year-old and he still has a screen time. So, you know, 1 hour screen time a day. So meaning like you want to use that hour on YouTube or TikTok or whatever, that's fine. But your apps shut down after that 1 hour, and that's it. They have to request more time if they want it.
Yep.
They also know that it's usually not approved. So they shouldn't probably ask anyway. But yeah, that's how we're big on, like, I just had a conversation with my oldest one before this podcast because he was chilling out watching TikTok and there was a lot of things he had to do. And I'm like, hey, I was like, how are you doing with everything you need to get done today? And he's like, oh, I just thought I'd chill out for a little bit. I was like, well, what does the rest of your day look like? He's like, oh, I've got this going on. I got that going on and this and this and this this evening. I was like, okay, well, you have these five things you have to get accomplished. When are you going to get that done? He's like, oh, you know, it's time management. And I go, that's not what I asked. I said, that's not what I asked. I said, that's a good fluffy answer. I said, that's not what I asked. Yeah.
You know, time management, like, dad.
Right. Time management. I was like, I need to know how, like how. And he's like, and I finally told him, I was like, look, get on TikTok, right? Watch your YouTube. I was like, it's okay to have downtime, right? But not at the expense of other things that absolutely have to be done. And I was like, that's part of being an adult. You know, like, it's easy to veg out. It's easy to just watch hours of TV. I was like, that is not productivity and that's not going to move your life forward. I was like, so we made an agreement yesterday that you were going to get some things done. And that agreement holds true. Yeah. And he's like, yeah. I was like, okay, so how do you plan on getting these things accomplished before the end of the day that we agreed upon yesterday? Mm. And he's like, I'll put the phone down. And so, like,
yeah,
you know, it's again,
great,
it's
not questions. Like,
right. It's more like
questions.
The questions versus like getting in their face and like telling them what they need to do or why you think that they should be doing it. It's more like you're gently nudging.
Yeah.
I think that's more effective.
Yeah. Oh, man, I love it. It's so good. Well, I know we're running out of time here, but I did want to have you share quickly about this new book. This is the fourth one. And yeah, it's exciting, coming out on Father's Day. What can people expect from the book?
So this book is called The Spirit of Fatherhood. It's actually, if you would have asked me, you know, 4 years ago, hey, are you going to write a Christian-based, faith-based view on fatherhood? I would have laughed. but I was asked to do it by this publisher, and I did it. And I'm newer to my faith. I'm only like 4 years into my deep faith, I'd call it.
Yeah.
And this book was a stretch for me, man. I'm not going to lie. This book was not the easiest thing in the world for me to write, but I wrote it from the most raw, most authentic. And the way I wrote it was, I am not a preach from the pulpit kind of guy. The book is more written of like, here's some things I've learned about faith and Christianity and this approach to fatherhood that I didn't know before. And it's really helped. And maybe I could give you some of the same things that I've learned, but I've had to learn it the hard way. That's really the way the book is written. It's written for literally from the day you bring your kid home all the way up into the teenage years and everything in between. It's got elements of leadership in there and forgiveness and communication and validation. So it's got a faith-based spiritual theme to it and feel to it, but it's also some earthly real-world tactical things too. So it's not just about faith. It's about actually intertwining both of them together executing fatherhood in the best way possible, but that's really what it is, and through that lens.
Yeah. One step at a time, one day at a time, and trying to learn from your mistakes. Man, I love it. Where can people go if they want to pre-order the book or check out more stuff on You and the Dad Edge?
So I know it's on Amazon. May 28th is pre-orders. Official launch is going to be Father's Day. TheDadEdge.com is where you can find everything I'm doing. Anywhere you download podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, iTunes, the podcast is everywhere. People are always like, what's the best way to connect or learn? I was like, just start with the podcast. It's the easiest thing to do. It's like, you get so much value and content in the podcast. Like, that's the easiest way to go.
I love it, man. I appreciate you taking the time to stop by. Same. Everyone check out The Dad Edge, get the book. And I want to just take a second to acknowledge you. And one of the things that I think is so remarkable about your story is you're making such an effort to model and mirror and pattern these things, like even with the RO box of like, I don't want to force them into, I want it to be something they choose to do. And I just love the way that you're preparing your kids for the world, the road ahead, instead of going and trying to bubble wrap everything and do it the other way around. But so many people will pattern, right, what they see in their life. And the fact that you had the childhood that you had, that had some obstacles, that had some turbulence, and you said, you know what, I'm actually not going to do that. I'm going to go the complete opposite direction and double down and learn everything I can. And then it turned into a whole industry for you. It's pretty amazing and cool. So it's a tip of my hat to you for that, man. I just appreciate the way that you show up in the world and that you're making a difference. And I want to leave you with one last question. If you're going to go back to yourself, let's say you're just about to have your first son, your first child, what would be the one piece of advice, knowing what you now know, that you'd pass along?
Don't go at it alone, because that's what a lot of men do when we have kids. We tend to isolate, and we lose community very quickly.
Yeah.
We even lose touch with some of our best friends. I will tell you, man, I love being one of the dumbest guys in the room. I don't ever want to be the smartest guy in the room when it comes to my circle of friends or a group coaching environment that I'm a part of. I'm always learning. I joke with a lot of my clients because like every single year I have a coach on the payroll for me, because I need to keep learning. I need to keep on point. And I don't do that unless I am investing in me and my education. And I'll tell you, it is never, ever done. Like, the learning is never done. It is always evolving. And I would just tell myself, don't go at it alone. Always be willing to learn. Don't be the smartest guy in the room. Don't be the fittest guy in the room. Don't be the richest guy in the room. Be in rooms where people are ahead of you and they can help you and you can help them as well. But before all that, I was like, I got to figure this all out on my own. But I think that's the wrong way to do it. It's a very frustrating way to live.
Yeah. Man, I love it. Let's get you the heck out of here, Larry. This was awesome. All right, man. We'll definitely do it again.
Sounds good, brother.